I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. I'm Duncan Ferguson. I will be your worship associate this morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Reverend Lisa Day, our minister, the Reverend Lisa Day, is our worship leader this morning. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for October is Cultivating Compassion. Here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, the symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. We light this chalice in honor of the animal realm, furred and hooved, two-legged, four-legged, many-legged, fanged and clawed, gentle and fierce, wild and tame. May we remember that all animals are our relatives, worthy of our care and respect.
In days of old, animals believed humans to likewise have a soul. Children mostly still think this today. Their limbs are small and weak. The heart, however, holds. Let us worship together. The words of meditation this morning from Thomas Rhodes. You birds of the air, hawk, sparrow, and laughing jay, you embody freedom itself. Delight us with your song, astound us with feats of migration. Grant us your perspective, for too often our horizon is limited, and we are blind to the full results of our actions. You worms of the earth, ants, beetles, spiders, and centipedes, you are the essential but oft forgotten strands in nature's web. Through you, the cycle is complete. Through you, new life arises from old. Remind us of our humility, for the wheel of life does not turn around us. We are not the axle, but merely spokes, no less than unseen, unknown, and shunned companions such as yourselves. You creatures of the wood and field and marsh and desert, bear and bison, skunk and squirrel, weasel and wolf, too often we have sacrificed your homes in the name of progress, clear-cutting the forests to fill our desires or covering the earth with tarmac, cement, and suburban lawns. Pray that we may remember that the earth was not given for our needs alone, and what we do to you, we eventually do to ourselves. You animals of the farm, horse and cow, pig and fowl, willingly or not, you give your very lives for us, your milk for our nourishment, your flesh for our sustenance. Yet too often, we forget that the meat on our table was once as alive as we are. Forgive our willful ignorance and remind us constantly to give thanks for your sacrifice. you dearest companions in our lives, dogs and cats, hamsters and goldfish, you who are with us today and you who are always present in our memories, you have enriched our lives in so many ways, enduring our shortcomings with calm acceptance. Teach us something of our humanity. Teach us how to love. May we hold you in our hearts throughout all the days of our lives. Our reading this morning, We Are All Whitman, number 30, Animal Song by Luis Alberto Ambrosio. It starts with these lines from Walt Whitman. I think I could turn and live with animals. They are so placid and self-contained. They do not sweat and whine about their condition. Well, sometimes. Who does not marvel at the spider's creative saliva, the ant's perfection, the butterfly's unsettled elegance, that the running blackberry would adorn the parlors of heaven? I used to fly into high dudgeon with the insult beast. Now in my soul I honor it, in spite of extravagant haughtiness. As when I pet Babe, my placid sheepdog, my animal companion who rejoices in my arrivals, licks me in the time of solitude, plays, begs, offers me therapy, understands me, guides me. He barks, of seeming to call out in wondrous language, paying heedless attention to incongruent commands, and at each goodbye howling his sentiments with an authentic whimper. Also, my girlfriend's cat and T.S. Eliot's practical ones pull it off with their spoiled ways, the rogue Mephistopheles' mysterious macavity dissembling his smooth crime. Our follies do not begin to match their stratagems. They are all indisputable circus performers. Recently, in the zoo's theater, the audience enjoyed a sea lion's applause, its ball handling skills, and other acrobatics. I witnessed, wonderstruck, in the oceanic snow of the Patagonian steep, a rage of penguins and their solemn march. We are touched by the mama's promenade with her ducklings, and the melody of puppy love still moves us. Little rabbits with their ears alert softness share our patois. The splendor of spirited stallions, fresh and responsive to my caresses with their bodies that tremble with pleasure as we race around and return. I wish sometimes to possess some of their gifts and talents. They bring me tokens of myself. They evince them plainly in their possession. And you, eloquent Whitman, insist to us that a mouse is miracle enough to stagger sextillions of infidels, that the cow crunching with depressed head surpasses any statue, that what the oxen express in their eyes says more than all the print I have read in my life. There they stand with the donkey in the manger. They accept what they are and what they have with neither resentment nor complaint. They don't need mirrors to fashion their beauty. They live naked, unshod in the hour's Eden. They sing the breaking of day with trilling not learned in school. Elk and other species snort when surprised or watch you without fuss, contemplating your presence. They move away, peaceful toward forest and the wisdom of its trees. They comprehend their place in the vastness of the universe. They sleep in peace. They don't trouble themselves over blame or sin, nor worries about money, or the corruption of more distant ambitions. They seem contented in their proper niches of plants, earth, air, fields, and rocks. Who would not trade their qualities for some of the human ones that afflict us? Here end the reading. In days of old, animals believed humans to likewise have a soul. I love bits of prose, poetry, movie dialogue, or song lyrics that turn our expectations upside down or inside out, such as those lines from today's Call to Worship by Anita Boehm, who translated them from the German herself. If we thought about it at all, we might debate whether or not there is some irreducible, indistinguishable bit of human existence that might be called a soul. Or we might have wondered, do animals have a soul? Such ponderings are familiar to me. And just for the record, I do believe there is some irreducible, inextinguishable bit of human existence unique to each of us. And I see no compelling reason to believe the same is not true of animals. It is hard to imagine what that might be or how it might function in a single-cell organism, perhaps. But then my beliefs are neither defined nor limited by my imagination. The idea, however, that there might have been a time when animals believed humans have souls, and further, that such a time has passed, now this is intriguing. We know that we anthropomorphize animals from our pets to the birds and squirrels that either entertain or annoy us in our yards to the characters that populate picture books and cartoons. We attribute human motives and emotions to them, hold conversations with them, give them backstories. But do animals do the same with us? I suppose we see some suggestions that they do. Herding dogs, for example, herd children or other family members, for example. Some animals seem to consider the human creature in their orbit one of them. Other animals seem to consider human creatures in their orbit predators, or perhaps prey, depending on whether or not the animal senses threat from the human creature. But do they know themselves to have souls? And was there once a time they consciously believed humans to likewise have souls? Well, that too is beyond my imagination. But if we suspend disbelief for a few minutes and accept the premise, animals with souls believing once upon a time that humans had similar souls, then the questions I keep coming back to is, if that time is past, then what changed and when? Did animals abandon their belief in the souls of humanity the first time they observed a species go extinct through human action, or the 100th time? Or when clear-cutting and strip mining and toxic waste destroyed one of their habitats after another? Or when they witnessed some of us carry diseases across oceans, devastating other members of our own species? Or saw us wage one too many wars against members of our species? Was it in Gaza, or Auschwitz, or the killing fields of Cambodia? Was it during the weeping time here in Savannah, or when women burned alive behind the locked doors of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory? Or when children were pulled from their beds in the early hours of Tuesday morning and zip-tied together and led into the dark streets of Chicago? Or was it more mundane? Did the steady drip, drip, drip of individual indifference and cruelty of one human toward another finally erode the animal's belief that we, like them, have souls? or yet more mundane. Perhaps the gradual distance that opened between animals and humans as urbanization and industrialization progressed simply made it harder and harder for animals to recognize us as kindred souls, so to speak. I know, and I see it on your faces. These are not celebratory ponderings for our usually jubilant animal blessing service. We aren't living in jubilant times, however. And I think you can perhaps understand why Annette Boehm's brief poem captured my attention. Still, though I do find the disturbing question it raises worth our consideration, I chose it for our call to worship not because of the pessimism of its opening lines, but for the optimism, cryptic though it is, of the final lines. Children mostly still think this way today. Their limbs are small and weak. The heart, however, holds. And I chose it, you can't know this because you've only heard it, you don't see it on the page. I chose it for the lack of a period or any punctuation after the final word. The poet seems to suggest that for whatever reason, and she doesn't elaborate, animals may have lost their belief in human souls, but children have not. And therein is cause for hope. We may have lost the animal vote, and that is not to be taken lightly, but we haven't lost the children's vote, and that also is not to be taken lightly. Now, I'm cautious about attributing an almost otherworldly innocence and depth of wisdom to children. Even if you haven't had much interaction with children in your adult life, you were a child once yourself. You know I'm speaking the truth when I say that to expect that sort of innocence and wisdom in children is not only unrealistic, but also unfair. Kids are only human, after all, just like the rest of us. Yet on the whole, children have had less time to observe us, be disappointed by us, be disillusioned by the frequent gaps between our actions and our professed values. So if there is a possibility that children still believe we have souls, not in so many words, of course, but as a conviction that we are worthy of their trust and love, that we can provide security and are able to protect those who need protecting, and that we will usually or often do the right thing, if even a few children believe this of us, perhaps we haven't lost our souls altogether, regardless of the animals having lost faith in us. Perhaps there is still something in us, collectively and individually, that both calls us and empowers us to preserve the animals' belief in us, to begin to repair whatever cost, to preserve the children's belief in us, and to begin to repair whatever cost the animals' belief. That is to say, perhaps there is still something in us collectively and individually that we can gather up and turn toward the healing of the world. In days of old, animals believed humans to likewise have a soul. Children mostly still think this way today. Their limbs are small and weak. The heart, however, holds. Does the poet mean that children's heart holds fate in humanity? Or that humanity's heart holds a soul? And why no final punctuation at the end of the poem? I double-checked both the German and the English. The poem simply ends after the word holds. I don't know what the poet meant by the omission of final punctuation. I like to think she meant for us to choose. Will our hearts hold only the shattered pieces of all our failures, an abyss where our souls once resided? Or will they hold our birthright as creatures with souls kindled by embers of holiness? Will they hold a vow to bless all our companions upon the earth and the will to match our actions to our words? Will the poem one day end with a triumphant exclamation point? Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.